Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another edition of Backstage Chicago. I'm Lisa Fielding from WBBM News Radio. And today we're in the beautiful, historical, magnificent Palmer House Hotel. And magic is in the air. And we're here talking with Dennis Watkins. And Dennis, you are the in-house magician here.
I suppose that's true. I've been running my show, The Magic Parlor, here at the Palmer House for the last 10 years. Or rather, New Year's Eve this year, in just a couple weeks, we will celebrate 10 years here at the hotel.
Thanks for being my guest today, talking everything about magic. And we talked in late August, kind of ahead of the fall, before you were reopening since the pandemic. Tell me a little bit about how the shows have been since then and how the audiences have reacted to the grand reopen of arts and culture in Chicago.
You bet. You know, there's something really remarkable that happened in August when we reopened the show, is that the audience came in the doors with a different appetite for live entertainment. They had been deprived of it for a long, long time. And the audiences were small coming in the door in August. You know, that was right when Delta was hitting, and they were small, but they were mighty. The people that were there were really excited to be there. And in the months since August, we've seen our audiences continue to grow, both in size and excitement. I think that it might sound strange to say, Lisa, but one of the fortunate side effects of the pandemic for me is that I feel like I got a better lens on why people go to a magic show, right? And it's for a community experience of joy and wonder. And that community experience is something that people weren't getting for a long time. And now that we're back open, I'm watching people experience that thing freshly in a new and different way, or a way that maybe they'd forgotten they could do. So the audiences have been remarkable, really fun.
That's great to hear. Now let's rewind a little. You're a really interesting guy. You come from an interesting family. Kind of take me back. How does one become a magician? How does one choose magic as a career and become a live performer?
I think there are a lot of different routes into choosing magic. I have a unique one, I think, or rather, I got really lucky because my granddad was a magician. My granddad, Ed Watkins, was a very good close-up magician, and he ran a magic shop in Texas called Douglas Magic Land for about 30 years. And so for a kid who wanted to do magic, I had everything I wanted at my fingertips. My granddad's knowledge. My uncle was also a magician for a long, long time. He's an actor now. It's kind of the same job, frankly. So I had those two to guide me and teach me. And then I had my grandfather's network of magicians and colleagues and friends, and all of the knowledge that he learned from running a magic shop for 30 years. So my route into it was through my family. A lot of people get into magic for a lot of different reasons. You know, it's a, you know, for nerdy people like me, it's a great art because I can practice it alone in my house, or could when I was a kid. And a lot of people find their way to it through different ways. You know, I also studied theater, and I studied theater because I wanted to be a magician. But I know a lot of people who've done a different route, who were studying theater and somehow found their way into the art of magic and started pursuing it that way. I think a lot of different paths. Mine is definitely through my family. And I couldn't be more grateful. You know, my granddad was a very, very, very good magician, was an excellent teacher, and just one of the greatest people I've ever known. So I was fortunate to have a really strong, direct mentor.
What is your earliest memory of learning tricks, and when did you kind of realize, you know, this is for me, I kind of like this?
I've been trying to place that earliest memory for a while, because I have very strong memories of what I think is the first magic show I performed. And I remember the tricks I was performing in that show. And I was around the age of 8. So that means I must have started learning to do that trick somewhere around the age of 7, according to my memory. My grandfather has passed, so I haven't really asked him. But those memories of early magic days, they're pretty fun. My strongest memories are of actually the time that I spent with my granddad at their house learning to do stuff. You know, it was really interesting. My granddad, at some point in my childhood, had left the magic shop and was running a photography business with my dad. And I would spend a lot of time at my grandparents' house, and we would go into what we called the blue room in his house, because all the walls were blue. And we'd go in the blue room, where he had these trunks full of magic props, and they held this remarkable sense of wonder and mystery to them. And I always wanted to just open them up and play with them the moment I got there and dive in. But we had some rules around it, right? He had to be there and he had to guide me through the things. And partially because you can mess that stuff up, and partially because maybe there was stuff like flash paper that would explode in there. Who knew? But my memories, the strongest memories I have of the early days, are sitting with him in their house, working our way through these incredibly intricate and old props that were at that point made by hand. Now they're all machine manufactured and things, but they were generally things that he would be able to tell me, who made this thing, and this is what it does, and this is how it works, and this is the illusion it creates. And those memories are super, super strong in me. And they're the memories that I think sparked the script for the show The Magic Parlor here at the Palmer House.
And do you remember your first performance in front of an audience, maybe your family or something like that? Do you remember that? Sometimes performers remember that spark, and they got the applause or the laugh or the wonder, and that kind of got them the bug to continue in live performance. Do you remember your first performance?
I think I do. I think it was my first one. And I remember doing this piece of magic that magicians call a square circle. And at that point, you know, I was 8 years old, so all the magic I was doing was prop driven. There was no skill involved in performing this thing, right? The prop did all the work for you. And it was a little production prop, a box that you can show empty in several ways, and then pull out scarves and flowers and all kinds of cool stuff. And I have a pretty vivid memory of performing that piece for a small living room of people for a kid's birthday for a neighbor when I was around the age of 8. And as far as my 43-year-old memory can recall, that was one of the very first performances. It's the first memory I have of performing a piece of magic and realizing that the people on the other end, the audience, didn't know how it worked.
Yeah.
Right? I have other memories of learning to do the tricks and how to execute them and exploring the props and the methods. But that's the first memory I have of performing it and realizing that there was mystery on the other side of the table. I guess I had experienced that as an audience member, but in watching my granddad do these things, even as a kid, to me it felt like a puzzle, because I wanted to learn how to do it, and that was the next thing we were going to do every time, right? He was going to show it to me and then teach me how to do it. So the mystery, the wonder was there, but very short-lived for me. And I remember the experience of pulling scarves out of this production box and going, these people think this is magic.
Did you continue performing into high school and in your adult years, obviously? And how did that road lead you here?
For me, it's a fascinating story. I hope it will be for you too. I remember being in middle school and telling my parents, you know what, I think I want to be a magician when I grow. I think I want that to be my job. It had been my hobby. It had been the thing that I loved. You know, I grew up in a small Texas football town, and I'm the kid doing card tricks, right? My brothers all played football, football captains, not me. I'm doing card tricks in my room. So in my family, where my granddad had been a magician and my uncle had been a magician, it made sense. And thankfully, I didn't have parents who said, oh, you need a backup plan. Let's go to law school first. My mom looked at me and said, oh, you need some acting lessons is what you need.
Nice.
So we signed me up for theater classes, and I started taking theater classes in middle school, and then I did in high school, and I studied acting in college. And that led me here. I went to Southern Methodist University in Dallas, which has a really remarkable theater school at the Meadow School of the Arts. And I studied also at the British American Drama Academy in London. And my college experience of studying theater in that little conservatory at SMU connected me with some really great theater artists. Or, I mean, none of us were great theater artists. We were in college, right? We were babies. We knew nothing. Turns out some of them are great theater artists these days. But we developed some really strong relationships. And there was a group of us who moved from Southern Methodist University to Chicago to start a theater company. That theater company is the House Theater of Chicago, and Nathan Allen was the artistic director. He and I went to college together. I met Nathan when I was going to visit SMU for a scholarship interview, because he had been awarded the scholarship I was interviewing for. University paired us. I stayed with him in his dorm for a weekend, and turns out 4 years later, we moved to Chicago together to start this theater company. And the house, we started with a play called Death and Harry Houdini. Nathan wanted to start a company that used a lot of remarkable, or I'm using that word a lot, using a lot of varied tools in storytelling. Magic was one of the ones that was really exciting to our group of people. And I brought that vocabulary to the table. And so we created a play called Death and Harry Houdini, all about Harry Houdini. We had no money at the time, but we opened the show on October 31st of 2001. Halloween is the day that Houdini died, so we had a terrible idea of running a seance before the show. Killed it. Bad idea. Don't do that if you're going to produce a play. But the play was actually fun and exciting, and the company got a good bit of press off of it, and we were able to grow and produce again. And then we produced Death and Harry Houdini again in 2003 with a little bit more resource and put a lot more magic in it. And then over the following 18 years, we did several more productions of Death and Harry Houdini, both in Chicago at the Adrian R. Center in Miami. And we built that play to use a lot of magic. There was Harry's water torture cell. People were getting cut in half, appearing, disappearing. I did a walk on broken glass, all kinds of cool stuff. And somewhere in that 20 years now, because the company just turned 20 years old, right? It's 2021. I'm older than I used to be. Right? It only goes one way. So in that 20 years, somewhere in there, I had been helping run the company administratively, and I realized that that was not for me, that running, being an administrator for a not-for-profit theater company is a noble pursuit, and it wasn't quite mine. So I left that position, and I started doing card tricks. I started gigging, which very quickly led into a real job of working through different agents and all kinds of nonsense. And I worked my way up to working good gigs. And the House Theater at one point wanted to do a fundraiser, and we produced a one-night show of a magic show that we made up a name for. We called it The Magic Parlor. Uh-huh. And that night, the fundraiser went great. We made a little bit of money. It was fun. And then I had a conversation with Nathan, and he said, would you be interested in doing sort of an ongoing show that we could sell tickets to? And I said, well, maybe. But, you know, I gig on Friday and Saturday nights. That's where I make my money, so I don't know how to make it happen. And he's like, we'll do it late night. We'll do a late night, 10:30 p.m. Friday night thing at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park in the basement parlor, which feels like it fits the name of the show, and it was quirky and it was weird, and we started doing that. We started doing it on Friday nights, and it was full. You know, and at some point, we came to a place, after about 2 years of running it on Friday nights, where we wanted to see if it had stronger legs. So we thought, could we move it downtown? Could we gussy it up a little bit? You know, it was a grungy Wicker Park theater, basement theater situation. What if we landed someplace that could make an upscale experience? And of all the places. I had no idea it would work this way, but we were able to get a meeting with Dean Lane, who's the general manager here at the Palmer House, and that man loves magic and had a big imagination and was able to see that this might be something that the hotel would be interested in. And that was 10 years ago. Wow. In a couple weeks, right?
Now tell folks what your show's about. I've been there, and you do amazing card tricks, and you do mental tricks as well, which are mind-blowing. So kind of describe, without spoiling it, what people can expect if they come to the Magic Parlor.
You bet. So I think that audiences have a wide picture of what a magic show might be. In the Magic Parlor here at the Palmer House, I perform close-up magic. We limit the house size to 44 guests. There are only two rows of seating. Everybody is close to the action. And more importantly, to me at least, everyone is involved in the show. Not in ways where people are made fun of or made to look foolish or embarrassed, but in fact, in ways that make them feel magical, hopefully. Knock on wood, right? Uh-huh. That's the goal. And I call the show an intimate evening of classic magic. Our guests come through the front doors of the Palmer House. They enter this big, glamorous, romantic lobby. You can't walk in here without feeling a warm nostalgia for an era that maybe you didn't even experience, but you feel it, right? And you come up the escalators into this little bitty room that seats 44 people, and we do 90 minutes of close-up magic and mind reading. I tell the audience at the beginning of the show, it's your thoughts and your choices that create the real magic. And even the card magic, the sleight of hand, lives in the imaginations and hands of the audience. And then we move into what I think is a really fun portion of the show. So we start with classic sleight of hand close-up magic. And then we move into mind reading and mentalism, which is a newer vocabulary of magic for me,
yeah.
In that I've only really been playing in that world for about 15 years. And I think about my childhood. As a kid, I just wasn't interested in it. I don't know why, because right now it's the most interesting magic for me. And we spend a lot of time in the world of mind reading and mentalism, which really lets the audience drive the ship during that portion of the show. And then we close out with a little bit more classic magic. And then, for guests who really want it, we move to the Encore Room, which is a smaller room in the hotel up on the third floor with a little fireplace and wood-paneled walls. And in that room, we have a round table set for 10. And I will sit there with 10 guests, and we will do a little bit more super close-up tabletop magic, have a little Q&A chat and that kind of thing for the guests who opt in for that experience.
Now, the Palmer House just celebrated 150 years, and you mentioned how these walls could talk here. And what's it like for you to do a show in some of these rooms that really are historical? Does it add to your kind of aura and the mystique to your show?
I think it does. You know, the environment that this building creates is insanely cool. You can't walk in here and not just pause for a moment and go, wow. And then you walk around to all the little rooms. You know, the entertainers that played the Empire Room, that list of people, Judy Garland, Frank Sinatra, and Harry Blackstone, the magicians that played this room, Cardini played this room. It's an amazing thing. And when you walk into the sort of green room off the side of the Empire Room, you see all these black and white photos of the artists that had performed on that stage. And right now, they're all displayed around the hotel because of the 150th anniversary. So guests are given an even bigger look into that. And you know, the little room that we started the Magic Parlor in, it's called the Crest Hill Room. It's on the third floor. It's the room we use for the Encore Room these days. And again, it has wood panel walls and a little fireplace. And I'm told that that is a room that was a favorite room to play cards in for one Al Capone. Like, the history in every nook and cranny of this building is palpable. And I think it's a really remarkable experience because our guests, you know, we come here on Friday and Saturday nights. It's when the hotel is full. It's when there's a wedding in the Empire Room, and you can see it, and you can hear the band. And it's not, I don't know what it felt like in 1940 when there was a supper club in there. But we you get a glimpse of it, right? And as an entertainer, your life can take so many different paths, right? And I know magicians who work in nightclubs. That is not for me. I know magicians who work in backyard parties. That is not for me. I know magicians who do all kinds of nonsense. And frankly, doing a little parlor scale magic show for 44 guests at a time, five times a week in a hotel like this is the dream job I never knew I wanted. And somehow I landed here and it just blows my mind every day.
Let's talk about why people love magic so much. I think back when I was a kid, I think almost every kid, boy and girl, buys a magic set at some point. I think I told you the last time we talked, there was a magician here called Marshall Brodeen.
Yes.
And he played Wizzo on Bozo.
That's right.
And kids who grew up in Chicago knew Marshall Brodeen because his commercials ran literally every 2 seconds. And yet parents were forced to buy his magic.
His TV magic card.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I remember my first magic trip. Now, I didn't pursue it, you know. But it's something that as adults, we remember that and we tap into what we loved as kids. Do you find that that's why people love what you do? That's why people come to still see magic? I feel like there's been a little bit of a resurgence in that, you know, America's Got Talent, Fool Us with Penn & Teller. Also, we've got the Magic Immersive going on in Chicago now. Do you find that more people are tapping into that childhood and thinking, you know what, I really want to see a magic show?
I think people are. I think that's a really wonderful thing. The marketplace for magic is hotter than I've ever seen it in my life. I think my granddad would have killed to have a marketplace for magic like we have today. And I think you hit the nail on the head that a lot of it has to do with shows like America's Got Talent and Penn & Teller Fool Us, allowing audiences to see magic outside of the context of a kid's birthday party. And magic is great there. And the performers that work those parties are great. And some of them are really remarkable artists. But for a while there, I think that's all people really thought magic was, right? It was either that or David Copperfield, right? Mm-hmm. And there was very little in between. Shows like Fool Us are really wonderful.
You were on that show.
I was on that show. It was a blast.
Yeah.
I did not fool them.
Oh,
but
no.
But I had a great time, and those two guys, Penn & Teller, are just remarkable. And I'm a Buffy fan, and Allison Hannigan was the host, and I got to meet Allison.
Yes, yes.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But
Angelot was just here, and we talked about you.
He was. Oh, good. Oh, thank you for that. Those shows, and one of the things that I think is really remarkable about Fool Us specifically, is that Penn and Teller have a goal there of helping magic appeal to wider audiences. And that means that they want a bunch of different kinds of magicians performing a lot of different kinds of magic. And that means audiences, to the tune of millions of people a week, are seeing magicians have different artistic voices, right? And that's something we didn't see before. Again, it was David Copperfield or The Birthday Party, right? There's two voices that people knew. And now we start to see that magic has an appeal to a grown-up audience, and there are different artistic voices that can speak differently. Eugene Berger is a Chicago magician who passed away just a handful of years ago, who was a great mentor to every magician in the city, who would always say, "The House of Magic has many rooms," and he meant that there are many different artistic voices here. And now, people are starting to see that the way that they understand that two singers are not the same. And I think that they're discovering that they can opt in to a magic experience without having to feel like a little kid, and getting to feel like a little kid. Right? It's the same thing. I think that magic serves an audience in a different way than a lot of entertainment. It doesn't mean it's a better form of entertainment, but it is a different form of entertainment. And the part of the imagination that magic speaks to is a vital part for people, I think. And it's one that we ignore. We consume a lot of a story. People consume stories all day long in different ways. And rarely do they come with a profound sense of wonder and mystery. Yeah. And we all need to hold space for a profound sense of wonder and mystery, whether we know it or not. And I think that if we can give people the chance to tap into that for a few minutes at a time, we're doing a real service. And a little while ago, I said there was something that happened in the pandemic that made me understand a little bit more about why we do the job that we do. And it has to do largely with, I think, that of being able to sort of let go. During COVID-19, the early days of the pandemic, we were all done. There was no, the mysterious was very scary to us, right? We were experiencing mystery every day surrounding this virus. Could we get it by checking our mail? Could we get it by, who knows, right? And so every bit of mystery that we encountered was terrifying. Yeah. But there's a kind of mystery that we can experience that is fulfilling and exciting and spectacular, and we kind of need it, you know?
Absolutely.
And we forget that we need it, and we're grown-ups, and we have jobs, and we have lives, and we have kids, and all, a lot of the mystery is scary. And I thought about this a lot in the days pre-pandemic when I was thinking about what you brought up, which is that magic is hot, it's everywhere, I can see it on TV all the time. Chicago is an amazing place for magic. Pre-pandemic, one week I was like, what's going on here? Let's do a Google search. I could have bought a ticket to 14 different magic shows that week. I mean, it's amazing, right? And I remember pre-pandemic talking to a friend of mine who's the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge and thinking, why are we able to do this for a living? Why are people doing this? And everywhere I went, I could go on Facebook, I could go to a stand-up comedy show, I could go to a play, and everything had been touched by Trump-era politics. Regardless of where you sit on that spectrum, everything. Your stand-up comic was talking about it. It was all over your Facebook feed. It was the overarching theme of any play that you were seeing because nobody could avoid touching it in any way, shape, or form. But you know where that doesn't exist is in a card trick or the experience that you have when you have it. And our guests were coming in the door and getting 90 minutes of entertainment that was not That was nostalgic, that was old school, and was 100% free of any of the things that were weighing us down. And I think that's one of the reasons it works, right? You don't expect to go hear jokes about politics from the magician. But you're going to like either roll your eyes or be like, I've had enough of it when you go to... I'm not going to say the venue's names because right. I like them.
So I've been a challenge for you. I'm going to say people like me. I have to admit, I'm a big skeptic. I'm chronically logical. So I'm the first person to figure out a movie, you know? And so I come to see your show and it drives me crazy because I can't, I mean, that's the point, is you don't want to figure out what you're doing. But what you do is truly mind-boggling. You did a trick with a book and a word or something without giving it away, and you had me participate, and I couldn't even begin to figure out how you did that. And it was frustrating, but in a good way.
Oh, good.
So good. I'm assuming you like to challenge people like that for sure with what you do.
I do, definitely. You know, when you, I tell people all the time that I think I have the best view of the show because I get to stand and look at your faces of the audience, and you see why people come to a magic show when the show is starting, right? You see people who sit because they are, and they're excited for the magic because they don't want to know how it works. They just want to live in the surprise. And you go, great, you're awesome. And you have people who come in the doors and you could see that they're a little skeptical. Maybe they don't think magic is cool yet or something. And then you see people who sit with their arms crossed in the back room. You're like, all right, this is a battle of the wits.
I know, that's kind of me. I admit it.
Like, I'm gonna figure
see
you
this
out.
This guy can do.
Yeah, I'll figure you out, magician.
Exactly.
You're not gonna beat me.
Exactly.
And you can see everybody's different reason for being there. And the people who, you know, I wouldn't be so bold as to say that every person who comes in the doors with their arms crossed going, yeah, I'm going to beat this magician guy, spends 90 minutes enjoying wonder and doesn't care about how it works by the end. But that's kind of the goal, right?
Yeah.
But I will say that in watching the show, I bet we get that guy for at least a couple minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know?
I remember in my audience, almost everybody shook their head and couldn't believe what just happened to them. You know?
Yeah, right? And I think everybody, I as a magician, I can relate to the part of you that goes, oh, that's so frustrating, right? Because I go see magic shows, and from time to time, I will admit that it's not frequent, but from time to time, I don't know how something works. And I won't pretend that as a magician, it's not frustrating, but I will say that every time that happens, I love it. Man, I love it.
Yeah,
I get to
too.
Sort of sit there for a minute and be like, whatever. I believe in magic for a minute. Mm-hmm. It's not magic. I know it's not magic. But I get to live in a world that's a little bit bigger and broader than maybe I see every day. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing feeling. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Derek Delgadio who created this show called In and of Itself that's now on Hulu. People can watch it on Hulu. And I saw that show when it opened at the Geffen Playhouse in New York, or excuse me, in LA. And then I went to New York to see it when it opened in New York. And I went to New York to see it because there was a piece of magic in it I couldn't explain. I think I developed some theories in the months between seeing it in LA and New York. And I went and saw it in New York. It's like, nope, still can't explain it. Mm-hmm. Which was frustrating, but also really joyous and magical for me. It's amazing.
How do you keep your material fresh? When I was talking to Pendulette, he talked about how people love the close-up magic. And even I read somewhere that Chicago was the home of bar magic, that kind of thing. So definitely you tap into that history. And what people seem to be most wondering about is close-up magic. They can see and they have to trust their own eyes, but then they don't. So how do you keep your material kind of fresh and new with every show? And it depends on the audience too. I'm sure they give you new material. Depends on the personalities that are out there, right?
Absolutely. It's you know, as a performer, it's a big part of it, is how do we keep it fresh for me? If it's not fresh for me, it's not fresh for you when you come in the door, right? And I love my job and I love to work. And in a normal year, 2020 and 2021 are clearly exceptions. But in a normal year, my team executes about 400 shows a year.
Wow.
So we do a lot of shows, and it's hard to keep it fresh. Doing work that puts performance in the hands of the audience keeps it fresh for me, because if I'm going to give you the wheel, then I kind of have to be awake, right? And there's a, you know, I think it's one of the things that makes the Magic Parlor a great home for audience members who like magic, is that I do put a lot of control in the hands of the audience. The mind reading portions of the show specifically, you can do a lot of things there that will drive the direction of the show. And one of the things that makes that fun for people, because a lot of audience members can feel pretty intimidated by that idea, like I'm gonna have to volunteer in this show. Like, what's going on? I don't want to do that. I don't want to be on stage. There's no stage. First of all, it's a small room of 40 people. But those folks, you guys and the audience, you're the scene partners. You're not the props. You're not a prop. You're not something that we're not going to make jokes against you or with you, but you're an actual scene partner in the show. And, you know, I have a background in acting, and a good scene partner keeps you awake and keeps you fresh, right? And a new scene partner does that every time. And in every show, I have 44 new scene partners. And I have no idea what you're going to do.
Yeah,
I have no idea how you're going to behave. Uh-huh. And the best way to keep the show fresh is by really letting it live with the people in the room.
And laugh with each other and even laugh at yourself when you, you know, get blindsided by whatever you're doing.
Yeah, right. We do get to laugh at me. That's allowed.
Exactly. What would your grandfather think of all this? You talked about how his mind would be blown by how popular magic is now. What would he think of you now, of really continuing the tradition? And I know you have kids yourself. Will you pass this along? Fourth generation?
If my son is 2.5 now, mm-hmm. so if he decides to do something foolish like go to law school or medical school instead of being a magician, I'm going to try not to be disappointed. He can do whatever he wants, and I will love and support it. But there is a big part of me that says, oh, generation four. That would be really fun. It would be really exciting. And, you know, during the pandemic, we did a lot of, and we're still doing a lot of virtual shows. And so we built a little broadcast studio in the house, and I'm able to do some really close-up magic because we get cameras right on that. And my son will come down now, and he wants to sit at the table and play the shell game with me, where we follow the pee. It's his favorite thing to do. So he's showing an interest, and I'm trying not to discourage that. Now, he's 2.5, so he doesn't keep up with the pee very well, but he's getting there. But my granddad, I think he would just be thrilled. You know, he passed away before we opened the Magic Parlor. He saw me do so many magic shows during my life. And I know that he loved it. And I know that he loved that what I was doing was a gift that he gave me. I do love magic. I can't imagine that I would have found my way to it without him. And as a kid, you know, we have different ambitions and pictures of what the future looks like. And so, like every kid magician, I was like, well, I mean, I want to play those big houses like David Copperfield and have smoke machines and awesome music and trucks full of props and blah, 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 blah. And my granddad would always say, well, kid, you know, you should be looking at some magic that you can do in people's living room, something like right in front of them, right? And I was like, well, that's not, why not? Why can't I have this chorus of dancers back? And the truth of the matter is that I might have been able to create a career where I was performing those kinds of houses, but I stumbled into a career where I was doing the kind of magic that my granddad did, the kind of magic that he tried to teach me to love, and that he did teach me to love. And it's for 40 people at a time that can be done in somebody's living room. It's here at the beautiful Palmer House. I think that this show would have made him so happy. I think he would have just absolutely loved it.
And you got your big 10-year show.
You got 10 years?
Yes, it's going to be on New Year's Eve, but you're going to be celebrating all next year, right?
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about the show and how people can get tickets.
Yeah, people can get tickets through the website, which is themagicparlorchicago.com. Go to themagicparlorchicago.com. We have two shows on New Year's Eve, a 7 o'clock show followed by a performance of the Encore Room, and then a 9:30 show followed by a champagne toast and a 10-year birthday cake reception. Mm-hmm. So we're going to celebrate the show being 10 years old here at the hotel with just a little bit of extra fun. The show itself has some new pieces of magic that I'm putting in it on New Year's Eve, just to keep it fresh, frankly, but also because there's some pieces of magic that I've been imagining in the show and working on putting in this show for a long time, that when we reopened, I thought we would just start working them in. And it turns out that reopening a live show in a pandemic requires an amount of focus on other things. But now they're starting to make their way in. And on New Year's Eve, we're going to do some new stuff that I'm really, really excited about. And then we'll get to celebrate with champagne and cake. And who doesn't love that?
Exactly. Congratulations on 10 years. Here's to 100 years more.
Amen.
How about that? Congratulations. Dennis Watkins, thank you so much for joining us for Backstage Chicago. Go to his show and prepare to be, right, your mind is blown when you leave your room up there, I feel. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next week, we go under the Spiegel Tent Zazu on the 14th floor of the Cambria Hotel and talk to some of the cast members of Teatro Zanzani. Subscribe to Backstage Chicago on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.